Bojo, welcome to Mishominwanoki, Yumi and Wrinkles, the Elder Abuse Prevention Podcast, a production of Sheater. I'm Joan Chandler. You're not about to hear stories about elder abuse. Instead, you're going to hear about one family's journey over several generations told by one man, Austin Elliott from Neoshinimig, Cape Croker, Ontario. This recording preserves a conversation I had with Austin on November 2nd, 2021. Let me give you a bit of context. I've known Austin for a long time. He was a part of the volunteer group for this project, and we'd had numerous conversations about elder abuse. Earlier in 2021, starting in May, the discovery of mass graves at residential schools shocked the world. Even as their existence had been known for generations by quite a number of people. One day Austin said, "We hadn't really talked about the history and impact of colonialism and those residential schools on family relationships." What was the link to elder abuse? Was there one? What was the teaching? He started to ask around and to think deeply about it. We were entering another COVID winter, and we met to talk about this over a jittery Zoom connection, rural internet being what it is. I apologize for any interference that you may hear. His story is one family's journey, and it's a thread in a much larger tapestry. I knew that he was telling things, well, uncovering truths, really, that can help awaken us to reconciliation as individuals and as a nation. You'll also hear songs sung by Shirley John, among others. Shirley, an esteemed elder from Saugeen First Nation, attended the residential school in Spanish Ontario. She honored Sheater by opening this podcast series, and you can hear her speak in the first installment. Stories and songs are powerful medicine. They're messages. We're passing these along so that we can learn and then pass them on to our families, our children, and our grandchildren, and those generations to come, so that we can get through this passage together and heal. Miigwech, Austin and Shirley, for sharing these.
Grandmother sitting in the east, I feel you looking at me. I pray to you, pray for you, you are sacred. I feel you looking at me. Grandmother sitting in the south, I feel you looking at me.
We had a conversation the other day and you gave me some ideas. So there are a couple of topics that I want to touch on with you. And one that you identified that was really at the root of the family dysfunction and of abuse that you said that we didn't really talk about much that you wanted to address, and that was the impact of colonialism.
Oh, right, yeah. Almost from the get-go of contact, it wasn't very amicable. It started impacting the East Coast families first.
Yeah.
And then as the settlers came westward, the European mentality and thinking and their so-called manifest destiny that they used began to shift the family culture. Introductory to new technology, I wouldn't say that was the cause of it. I would say the cause of it began to be when, I guess, the forethought of residential school and the years that it was thought about before the first school went up. We didn't, nobody talked about that agreement that was drawn up and how it came about.
Can you tell me about that?
My understanding was simply this, that it was an agreement between the First Nations to have a common school in which we could send our youth to learn the new technology, to become educated, to come home and share that. That was supposed to be the beginning of the premise of it. And then when the agreement was drawn up, it was drawn up that we would use certified teachers. And that agreement went off to the government, and somewhere along the line, it got changed from certified teachers to the church. Yes. Now, because of that, some of that school money that was used at the beginning was money that came out of money held for Native in trust.
Money that what?
Money that was held in trust.
In trust. Okay. Yeah.
That means treaty monies for land, that kind of stuff.
Ah, okay.
And the government has a treasury that they use as in trust. That in trust money built the 400 system. That in trust money built the railroad. That in trust money built the CN Tower.
What?
Yes. That in trust money built that Mount Louise Motel up there in Alberta.
Oh.
That big CN motel out there?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was built by money in trust. Any brand new highway now has to go through us, but the money still is partially done with money held in trust.
Okay. Wow.
So if you need a new road allowance built on your township, guess what? You got to talk to the natives.
Okay.
And that money goes to the government, to the highway.
I never knew that. Wow.
Yeah. We have to give permission to Ontario Hydro to put hydro lines in.
Wow.
Yeah, anywhere within the Saugeen or Ojibwe territory.
Huh, I didn't know that.
That last corridor that was built out of the nuclear power center?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. They had to get permission from Cape and Saugeen for that corridor line to cross through Saugeen or Ojibwe territory.
Right. Yes, and, of course. Yeah.
And of course, we get a pretty good stipend because of that.
Yeah.
As part of an agreement. So that kind of money comes straight to us. That kind of money changes a community.
How?
Things get a little bit better. Our food bank got better. Okay. So our chief and council have stepped up and started supporting our food bank. So we're in the process of now drawing up blueprints to build a new building to house the new food bank.
Oh, good.
With a big enough area that we can have dining area.
Wow.
Because right now, the way it used to be before COVID, as a senior in the community, we look forward to a week meal that was provided by the food bank. You know, and it was cooked in the kitchen at the community center.
Yes.
And now there's not enough room in the community center to store the food anymore.
Whoa, okay.
And it goes out about as fast as it comes in.
Yes.
So I would say absolutely Good money does good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But having said that, we still have to deal with the repercussions of abuse on our elders. I know a little bit about what that is because I watched it. We didn't ask about, oh yeah, going back to colonialism history. I wish some of our people wrote down some of our oral history. They tell stories about some of our young people, say around 1800, knowing about war in a new sense of incoming, first the separation of our territories, and then the falling apart of family starts when guns are introduced, alcohol is introduced. And at that time, we have to remember that as the settlers went into a new territory, a public place was one of the first or second things that was ever established in a village. That's where some of the natives would gravitate toward because that's where they might be able to get alcohol. Public place is just a nice word for saying a tavern.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And in American history, it records a public place as the second place built in America.
Interesting.
By the settlers. And so that was a pattern that went across as the settlers moved in exploration to the new places and developed new villages. And in those new villages, public place was the first or second place that went up besides the church. So the problem of alcoholism amongst First Nations developed with the movement of these so-called public houses. We can get some land, we can get whatever we want from the natives, we can trade them this because that's what they want. I don't know how we as a people developed that or became addicted to it. I myself am a recovering alcoholic, and that was hard.
Yes, yes.
And I'm glad I did. You know, I really am, because now I'm a better grandfather to my grandchildren.
Yeah.
And I'm a better communicator with my children. I guess we could, conversation on my head's going all different ways right now.
I bet.
I don't know how my grandparents dealt with it. I should say one thing, that I don't ever remember seeing my grandparents being abused in any way whatsoever. I was pretty much raised in my grandmother's house, and all we ever had was respect for her.
Yes.
And my aunts, of course. But I also have to remember too that they came from a World War I veteran who was their father. He was just one generation of people who had just moved to Cape Croker to make a permanent settlement in the late 1800s.
Right, right.
He was amongst those new people here.
Yeah.
We still had a little bit of that understanding of what a traditional family was and should be and how it should be respected. And yet, his respect from his children was to a hard life, you know, of course. My grandmother says she worked hard. The day she heard her boyfriend's car honking down the road, she put on her shawl, took her purse, walked down the road, and never went back. But she saved her own family by doing that. She saved them who saved her own children from what the natives went through, residential school. Mm-hmm. Saved them from the 60s scoop by urbanizing them.
Interesting. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And my mother saved us from the 60s scoop by taking us to grandma's house from May till October.
Right.
A year. And to escape that, we went as kids, went with our parents to farms where our grandparents were working for a farmer. And we would take one of the cabins, and my parents would work side by side with my grandparents on the farms that we chose to go and live on throughout the farming season until apples were done. And then we'd get on the back of a flatbed truck and we'd go back to Cape Coca here and go to school. Spend the winter and then come springtime, do the same thing. Some of us got away from that 60 stuff that happened. And some of those people who went to residential school put their children and their families on the back of those flatbed trucks and went to the farm off reserve. And some of those kids never saw the 60 scoop.
Right, right.
And some did. And I can't say that urbanizing your children saved them from the 60 scoop, because it didn't. No. If you were urban, he got scooped up too.
Hmm.
So it wasn't just on reserve kids that happened here. And so they come back. As grandparents, some of them have lost affection or don't know how. My grandmother, she had a hard time returning affection.
Mm.
Because we talked about it as she got older, and it was because they didn't hug you. They didn't love you. You were a body that went from get up, get dressed, have breakfast, go to school, do your work, have your supper, do your work, get ready for bed. A routine, she said.
Yeah.
She said it wasn't always good. She went to a residential school in Muncie. And I asked her how life was there. She says that shrugged her shoulders at first, and then she began to talk about them. Mush seemed to be one of the main meals because the school was not giving all the good food out as they were supposed to. And she says that the good food comes out and important people came to visit. So when they saw a meal, they didn't see what was a regular meal. They saw what was a show meal. Some of our elders will talk about that. Some of them won't.
Yeah.
And so when they come back, you, as a young adult, they have walls built up. And a lot of those walls are... One is allowed in there, and that's a part. And within that wall is a family, but that family doesn't get love because the residential school person didn't know how to reciprocate what was trying to be given to them. I watched it in my grandmother, and I watched that in my father-in-law. And they're both they were both residential school survivors.
Mm.
Both passed away, but they had time to tell me about what life was for them when they came home. The impact, and so when we say colonialism, that's what I'm talking about. Is the impact of new ideas such as residential school send our children off to technology school. That's what we thought we were doing. But the church thought, no, we're going to teach them how to farm. We're going to limit their education. We're not going to introduce them to technology. They wanted us to become farmers. Some of my grandparents and uncles and aunts, grandaunts, they were great farmers. So what they learned in residential school, was the only thing they had.
Right.
They were denied what was in the original agreement of how to establish a residential school and what was going to be taught. Now, we thought we were going to send our kids off, become technical people and learn all the technology that was out there. But, you know, they didn't want that. Eliminate the Indian and save the man, you know?
Yeah. If you or someone you know is experiencing pain or distress as a result of their residential school experience, call the Indian Residential School Survivors and Family 24-Hour Crisis Line, 1-800-721-0086.
How do you get away from that impact, the walls they put between people that limited emotional connection?
That's a chipping away. Things like when they stiffen up when you hug them. That's a clear sign that they're not used to that.
Mm-hmm.
That's a field that very few have gotten into. And so I'll give you an instance. My wife, when we had children, and we take them up to introduce them to their grandfather, and they were so used to hugging us and my mom and dad that when they met him, they thought that what you do, and they would hug him, and he would very stiffly reach down and pat them on the back, and then after a while, he enjoyed being hugged. He was able to hug his daughter. But then that took a little time to get through, to a point where all of his other grandchildren were now able to hug him. And after a while, he was loving it up. He was smiling and holding some of them on his lap and taking pictures and celebrating family gatherings and smiling from ear to ear. So those walls take time to take down. Those walls only come down when they're ready to accept the new affection and the new embraces. And once you can get them to share that, even with me as an adult, they're getting hugs from this man and getting a response. Because I'm used to hugging my grandma and grandpa and my mom and dad. So when it came to hugging him, that was a new thing for even his own children to hug him.
Yes.
As adults. With their own children. So it only takes one family who's willing to say, I'm not going to give up on the effects of the residential school that has been produced on my grandmother or grandfather.
And it's not about talking about it. It's about doing. It's about sharing.
It's about sharing and including that physical contact. Natives are a hands-on people.
Yeah.
And I can say that with just a small story. An elderly couple, Anishinaabe couple up north, said that they got together. It wasn't because of love. It was because of companionship and survival. Some say that love didn't come by the way. Some say love came years later. They don't know how it transformed into love, but over a period of time it did. Those were the stories of the people who were my great-grandparents. They were together for survival. They went together because they loved each other.
Yes.
And that was a different great-grandparents were different from my grandparents. My great-grandparents and great-grandmother, from the stories I were told them, they had the respect of their son. That's all I know about my great-grandfather and my great-grandmother. Knew that they were farmers and knew that they fished and knew that she was from Saugeen, just like a lot of other couples that are intermarried here from Cape and Saugeen.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of us have slowly watched and put our own grandparents in old age homes, which was really hard for my mom to place her mother in an old age home.
Yeah.
And the same with my dad. It was hard for him to place his mother in an old age home. In the old days, I don't know what they would have done, you know, up north. I don't know how they did it pre-contact.
Right.
I know how the Eskimo, and I mean, I know how the Inuit did it, you know?
Yeah.
They kept them until they breed no more. And I believe that's how we did it. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Because my mom and dad, they never went to an old age home. So they rented an apartment at the seniors' residence. To them, that was not an old age home.
No.
To them, that was now their home. But that's companionship that grandparents back in their day, in even their parents, relationships were an early start. And my mom was 17 when her first child was born, 14 when she started dating my dad. And they were together from pretty much that time until they departed. Same with my grandmother, the story I told you about. She heard the horn of her boyfriend's truck down the road. She stayed with him until he succumbed to Alzheimer's. And he passed away from a massive heart attack.
Mm.
He was a World War II veteran, and he lived a good life, you know. Yeah. He enjoyed it. He had grandchildren he enjoyed. And he went on and lived for another 10 years after him.
So what you're talking about, Austin, I think is really about the importance of family taking care of each other and family sharing emotion and respect for each other. And that is a key thing in... it's a key thing in having healthy families and having families that are going to support each other and not abuse each other. Yeah?
Correct. Yeah. Yes. Yes. I guess the story I told you is the story of my family and how we live.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is not everybody's story here.
No.
There are some here who grew up in an abusive situation. No, hearing it as they grew up, seeing it as they grew up, doing what they saw.
Yeah, yeah.
Or their veteran who was a residential school survivor came home and is now a kind of a stiff person to live with, and demanding certain actions from you. I watched World War II veterans and their interaction with their children, and rather they, you know, and noticing that they came from residential school compared to my parents and my grandparents, and how those children we're treated.
Mm-hmm.
A pattern appears in family relationships.
And as you said, it's going to take a long time to break down the stiffness that you talk about, to build families that share the kind of affection that your family did. And like your father-in-law, to learn to love that.
Yes, exactly. No, I have great respect for my father-in-law for the day he passed away.
Mm-hmm.
He was a great man to work for, to talk with, to hear history from,
mm-hmm.
to learn about the actions of the Indian Act and how it impacted us and how it disabled us as a people. Geez, I think it wasn't until 1960s or somewhere around there where you finally didn't need the permission of the Indian agent to go to town and line up at the liquor store.
Yeah, I remember those days.
Okay. And then when the Indian agent left, they still let us line up at the liquor store. Okay. So he got us ready for something.
Yeah.
Maybe it wasn't the right thing, but you know. But we had a furniture factory here. A lot of our grandparents worked here, but the Indian agent didn't see it as a viable project and they shut it down one time. And then when Wilmer Najwan came home, he got involved in the furniture factory. And I saw pictures of it. It was nice, beautiful stuff.
Wow.
And again, he said it didn't work because it was government support. Nothing, he said, as a business can be supported by a government.
Right.
So I guess there are things that we can learn from even those people who were hard to hug, because they observed a lot of people around them and how they acted and reacted. Because my father-in-law became a good chief. I watched other families after we talked more at the beginning there about what Wrinkles was all about. And so I began contacting a lot of my other family on other reserves.
Yes.
And asked them to tell me their story about grandma and grandpa, their grandma and their grandpa. And the story they told me is the same kind of story that I told you about my family. And those are my family, who are like my grandmother's sisters.
Mm.
My grandmother's brother. I wanted to know about if there was elder abuse and you know, were they willing to talk about it if there was. And if he saw something that you thought was or might have been. Pretty much all the stories came back. You know, my mom and dad, my mom and dad got total respect, because if you didn't, you got smacked.
Yeah. Yeah.
No. And so if you're the older one and a bunch of kids and you saw the older one being disciplined, you're going to follow in line.
Yes.
And you're going to do what your mom and dad want you to do, because that's how their mom and dad raised them. Maybe not with the smack, but with the discipline.
Yeah.
When we come back to repairing some of the abuse our Nokomis and Mishomis are being treated with, how do we fix that? We fix that by introducing a family amongst them who have grandchildren.
Mm.
And you take those grandchildren to see grandma.
Yeah.
Take those grandchildren to see grandpa.
Yeah.
You know? Because you keep doing that, and those grandchildren are going to bond with grandma and grandpa to a point where, trust me, even a visit here and there or an all-day visit, overnight visit, turns into, can I go to grandma's house? Can I go to grandpa's house? They want to go there because they get good feelings.
Yeah.
Grandma and Grandpa can now, he got time with them now. We're going to rebuild the family nucleus, the support system that it's supposed to be. You know, colonialism is such a big plate.
Oh, boy.
We cannot begin, really, to understand what colonialism did. But how do we now begin to recover and repair from it?
Yeah, and it's within the family that that happens.
That's right. And that's where the first step of decolonialization starts. But having said that one little sentence, I'll say this. My father-in-law, Wilmer Nadron, said, you take the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
And you move along. He said, there is nothing that we as First Nations people cannot adapt to or have them adapt to us.
Yeah, he was a great man, that's for sure.
Oh, that's for sure. No, you know what? Thank you very much for letting me ramble on. That's what I thought I was doing here.
Okay. It's been my pleasure and my honor. Thank you so much for this today.
Grandmother sitting in the east, I feel you looking at me. I pray to you, pray for you, you are sacred. I feel you looking at me. Grandmother sitting in the south, I feel you looking at me. I pray to you, pray for you, you are sacred. I feel you looking at me. Grandmother sitting in the west, I feel you looking at me. I pray to you, pray for you, you are sacred. I feel you looking at me. Grandmother sitting in the north, I feel you looking at me. I pray to you, pray for you, you are sacred. I feel you looking at me. Grandmother sitting on the earth, I feel you looking at me. I pray to you, pray for you, you are sacred. I feel you looking at me. Grandmother sitting in the skies, I feel you looking at me. I pray to you, pray for you, you are sacred. I feel you looking at me. Grandmother sitting in my heart, I feel you looking at me. I pray to you, pray for you, you are sacred. I feel you looking at me. 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 Mi quatch.
Mein Gott, bin die Gay. Oh, mein Gott, bin die
Gay. Elder abuse is not uncommon. The World Health Organization found that 1 in 6 seniors worldwide experience abuse. Statistics Canada says it is higher in Indigenous communities. Today, we mentioned a number of community services that can help. We need you to know that as we're offering you information, resource, and links, what we're saying is not legal or medical advice. This is a conversation. It's a guide. Please seek the advice of professionals and people who can help you in your community. If you or someone you know is affected by elder abuse, call the Senior Safety Line in Ontario anytime, anonymously and free of charge at 1-866-299-1011. The Senior Safety Line provides information, referrals, and support in over 200 languages. Call them at 1-866-299-1011. Call 911 if you have an emergency or if someone is in immediate danger. Call 211 if you need help in connecting with supports and services available close to home. And remember, if you see or feel that something isn't right with a friend of yours, it's okay to ask them about it. You might be just who they need today. For more information about CHEATER and this program, or to find links to our panelists, or for instructions on how to use Wrinkles as a resource for group discussions, please go to our website at www.cheater.com. You can also visit us on Facebook and Instagram.
The audio drama Mishominwanoki, Yumi and Wrinkles was developed in a workshop with and features the voices of Gloria Mae Eshkabach, Daniel Gonzalez, Bernadette Eshkakagan, Fawn Jacko, Marjorie Trudeau, Daniel Pelche, Jeff Eshkakagan, Brenda Wabi, Kitty Bell, Dorothy Kennedy, Daniel Roy McDonald, Paul Hartman, and Rose Pelche. The audio drama was directed and produced by Joan Chandler, script adaptation by Joan Chandler, technical director Paul Hartman, mixed at Avenue A Studios. Mishominwanoki, Yumi and Wrinkles, was produced by Joan Chandler and David Sarita, written and edited by Joan Chandler, music producer David Sarita, technical producers Jason Manitowabi and G.I. Holm. Technical assistance by Justin DeForge, with additional recordings by Kevin Moyes, G.I. Holm, and Trevor McKenzie. Wrinkles was mixed at the Dabajamajig Creative Studios in Manitowaning and Walls Down Studio, Owen Sound, Ontario. Podcast music includes Hank Williams' Hey Good Lookin' and Honky Tonk Blues, The Humble Song by Daniel Roy McDonald, performed by the Otaminkwe Singers, Fourth Fire by Alanis King and the Windsor Women's Hand Drum with Isabel Mayawasige, Strong Woman by Maggie Paul, Eagle Song, the traditional, by the cast, and additional music by the Mwikwidong Indigenous Friendship Center staff. Mishominwanoki, Yumi and Wrinkles was funded by the Government of Canada's New Horizons for Seniors program, the Ontario Trillium Foundation, Justice Canada, the J.P. Bickle Foundation, the Community Foundation Grey Bruce, Employment Ontario, and the Ontario Arts Council. Thanks for the support of the Healing Each Other program and Amacook Seniors Center, Wikwemekong, Dabajamajig Creative Studios, and Mwikwidong Indigenous Friendship Center, Owen Sound. To join them in helping us tell stories that matter, you can make a donation at cheater.com. You can also support the podcast by sharing it with others, hitting the like button, and posting about it on social media.
Wrinkles is a production of CHEATER. I'm Tanya Coulter, and thank you for listening.